extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from Kansas City. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle. I'm back. I'm warm. The power is on. The water is flowing. It's 17 balmy degrees here in Kansas City. And I got to throw a shout out right off the top to Thomas Mimbioli, who had the solution to my intro problems all along. It was staring me in the face. Thomas, thank you for being the voice of reason here. I just needed to stop saying that I'm in my basement and say that I'm in Kansas City. Two-thirds of this show, as it stands right now, are in New York. I can keep my intro, okay, guys? I feel good about it. And I did not listen to the last show because I know that when I'm not here, you rip me and you shred me and you drag me and I can't defend myself. And so just for my own peace
actually,
of mind, I can't listen.
Even worse, Doyle, I don't even think we mentioned him. Who? I don't even think he came to the last show.
Mentioned who?
Oh, man. God.
Yeah, you're talking about.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Just business as usual here on Extra Time. Nobody important missing. Nothing to report on a news front. Big show today. There is some news. Thierry Henry. As we knew would be the case, the rumor mill just swirls around him. Now it's Bournemouth in the championship, maybe moving on. The Mirror is reporting this. Apparently it's all the buzz in Montreal. We have nothing official on that, but you know we're going to dive in. Chicharito, give an interview to the LA Times. Kevin Baxter, it was a tough 2020 for all of us. It was a agonizing 2020 for Chicharito. We'll talk about that. We'll do some matchmaker with the free agents that are left of the big names. But first, the producer and Anders reminder of the day. You know, we joke about the power, we joke about these things that are going on that I'm dealing with. It's not a joke for many millions of Americans right now. So our thoughts go out to those of you who are listening or watching or whatever you're doing or have family in Texas or anywhere where there are issues right now with power, with the things that we take for granted every day that help us survive and stay comfortable. I know there are some big relief efforts going on in MLS right now. Go check out what Austin FC is doing. Matt Beasley tweeted it out. They're trying to lead the charge to help people in the region. They're dealing with this as well. I saw Zarek Valentin saying that he and his family and his toddler, they didn't have any power either. Doyle, I know the Dynamo are trying to do something. I mean, these are these moments where, you know, we can joke about these things, but it is very, very real for people. And there is a way to help, and we can all band together and do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's looking like a national tragedy at this point already. And it looks like it's going to keep getting worse for Texas over the next 24 hours. So if you can help, please find a way to do so. Go into the team accounts on Twitter is a good place to start. And, you know, if you can give, please do.
All right, let's get to the soccer here. We're back, baby. Like, not right now to talk about soccer, but on SiriusXM, we're back. Tuesdays, 8 p.m. If you were listening, we were on Fridays, 9 or 10 p.m., depending on counterattack schedule. That'll be the schedule going forward. It might change a little bit for the MLS season, but if you have SiriusXM, we are now there. If you're listening to us on SiriusXM right now, awesome. You can get us directly to your phone. So please subscribe to Extra Time if you enjoy the show here. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, we also have the video on YouTube for every episode. So check that out, the MLS YouTube channel. Thank you for listening. We're glad you're here. And if you have friends that enjoy MLS and podcasts, go tell them to check out the show. Rate us, please. We're bad at self-promotion. I always just kind of recoil when I put in the rundown or somebody does or an executive says, you should really push subscriptions. I'm like, feels pushy. But we should probably just be a little bit more pushy. So like, please subscribe and tell people about us. That would be awesome. And definitely go to MLSsoccer.com to check out Doyle's U.S. national team. U23 depth chart, big year for the Olympics. You guys talked about that on Tuesday's show, so I'm told. And Tommy Scoops had a list of the biggest transfer stories to keep an eye on as we head into the preseason. So good stuff at MLSsoccer.com. Doyle and I have columns coming there as well later this week, so check those out. Now,
should I write an article for MLSsoccer.com, the 10 biggest Doyle and Wiebe stories to watch out for in 2021?
That would actually do some clicks, but I've seen the way you write. We're in a couple of group chats together, so I think you should have somebody write that for you.
I should 100% write it on a phone, because then it would be in five different languages. You wouldn't even have to translate it, because it just comes out as chaos.
Yeah, we have to question yourself. Is autocorrect actually your best possible
at this point autocorrect takes correct words and moves them back into the ways that my fat fingers have been spelling them for 5 years. So I'm already through the looking glass.
All right. Well, hey, we have editors for a reason. So feel free to file, man. I would read that. I would read anything on Thierry Henry right now from the folks up in Montreal, because I'm sure they're wondering what's up. Bournemouth says the Mirror. Christian Jack, who knows everything going on in Canada, says it's a buzz in all the WhatsApp text group chats within CF Montreal Club de Foot. Did I say Impact? I don't think I did. I think now I have, but I was safe until now. Thierry Henry to Bournemouth. I think they're sixth in the championship right now. Does it make sense? Is this something that when you hear this link, you think, ah, yes, this was the inevitable step. This is why Thierry came back to MLS. He said, you know what? That Monaco thing, got to put that in the past. Got to get back into it. Got to get into the game again. Got to do this job, regain a little bit of passion, get a little bit of traction, get my name back into the circles they need to be in, and eventually I will get a job in Europe because I am Thierry Henry. And my resume speaks for itself. My name, my presence, everything speaks for itself. You are our honorary Canadian, Dave. Does this make sense to you? Is this something you expect to actually happen? Or does this just feel like silly season and Bournemouth just grasping at straws?
Before you answer, David, I just need to establish for those of us who maybe missed Monday's show. David did not even know that Montreal is an island. He had no idea that Montreal is an island.
When you have love like we do,
please continue.
No one is an island, Doyle. When you have love, and you have friends, and you have family. But I would say this: what makes sense is Thierry Henry is a massive name. Thierry Henry has agents and managers. Every single job opening that could be interesting, Thierry Henry will be mentioned in because they will make that happen. If he wants an interview, he will get one. And if the team wants it to be known, they will leak it. And so all of it makes sense that he would be connected. Is this the job for him? It's interesting. The first name that comes to mind is Frank Lampard. He coached at Derby County to start, and then he got his job at Chelsea. Now he got accelerated to Chelsea because he was a club legend there. Henry, of course, has that connection to Arsenal. Arteta's there. You don't know when it's going to open up. It felt like he came to MLS to kind of get his coaching feet of like, I want to show that I can have a long-term project and build something similar to what guys have done in the championship, which you'd hope if he was successful would accelerate him past needing to go to Bournemouth and push him to a first division job. But at the same time, I think if you're Thierry Henry, it's hard to look at CF Montreal right now and say, I'm set up for success in 2021. Because when you look at one, wherever they're going to have to play and how it's going to be set up based on what you had to do last year. But two, the way the roster build's gone and the way they've put this group together, and this could be a fun, feisty, young team, but you look at the standings, and last year you finished behind the New England Revolution and ahead of Inter Miami, and the best players on those teams and the bulk of those starting 11s are more experienced, more talented, and a lot of times higher paid than what you have on your roster. And so for Henry, it's hard to look at it and say, no, this isn't the perfect job for me, and I'm going to have a good 2021 and have my stock even higher in a year. So if there's a legitimate opportunity here to go to a club that's going to fight for promotion into the Premier League, it makes sense for him.
I don't think right now, and this is probably just me being naive, that right now Thierry's going to be in a ton of first team conversations. Is that dumb of me to say? Just based on his track record, like how he doesn't have, like whether it be Monaco or now with Montreal, it would be a huge leap of faith, let's say, for a board or whoever it is that's making this hire. An owner, you know, maybe that's the route, is that the owner says, I want Thierry Henry, and maybe that's also the route he's in right now, says, yeah, you come to my EPL job, you come to my Ligue 1 job, you come do this thing where the stakes are super high right now. To me, and Bournemouth, the stakes are super high too. They expected to be promoted this year, and they're in sixth, and they're kind of grasping. Like, that's why, to me, this doesn't necessarily make a ton of sense. And it, you know, it is from the Mirror, and Mark McAdam, I don't know who that is, but he covers for Sky and others in England, the Bournemouth area. His first tweet about this that got deleted was that the Bournemouth board had spoken to Thierry Henry. That one went crazy wild. The Mirror probably picked that up. That's probably where it came from. Then he deleted that, and then he said, breaking, Thierry Henry is someone the Bournemouth board would like to speak to. Not has spoken to, would like to speak to. And now there are people saying that maybe even Patrick Vieira is in here as well. I think the inevitable thing is that Thierry Henry will leave. I'm just not sure, Doyle, that this is what the job that will pull him out, whether it be he or the other side. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe I'm being, as I said, a little bit naive, but this doesn't necessarily seem like it, other than I don't want to deal with the logistics. And as Dave said, maybe my expectations this year in Montreal are going to be very difficult to meet and I lose some momentum.
It feels like that one has a very good chance of being true, because I have pulled up the depth charts as we were talking, and there are some interesting young pieces on this team, but you're not looking at a team in terms of total talent that you could justifiably pick any higher than like eighth in the Eastern Conference. And if that's the case in year two, it seems unlikely that at that point Henri would have the resume. Who is buzzing?
That's going to be the dryer.
Okay. It seems unlikely that he would have the resume that would propel him to, the manager's job at a team at a higher level than Bournemouth is at right now. So if their interest is there, and this, for a team that's fighting for promotion and that maybe can end up in the EPL next year, for Thierry Henry, it makes a lot of sense. But it also makes a lot of sense for Bournemouth to kick the tires and look around a bit. And this feels very much like a situation where I'm sure there is interest, but I will believe the interest. I will believe it when I see it, in terms of this culminating with Thierry Henry leaving Montreal. Like, I don't think that is the obvious outcome at this point, just because there's got to be other candidates. I think I've read something that Patrick Vieira is a candidate as well. And if you're choosing between Thierry Henry and Patrick Vieira at this point as your head coach, no disrespect to Thierry Henry, but you're going with Patrick Vieira given the relative amount of success. So
listen, I love Patrick Vieira. He's my favorite player of all time. But he had one good year at NYCFC and then had a long-term failure in France where Henri had a
long-term failure?
I mean, he was there for 2 years and didn't succeed. I'm saying Henri's job at Monaco went terribly, mm-hmm. but it was such an anomaly in that it was so quick and so bizarre that I think it's easier to write it off. I also would say that I don't know that I agree with you guys in saying that he couldn't get a bigger job right now. Like, he's won Thierry Henry, so there's that. And he does have credentials in that he was an assistant for a World Cup semifinalist in Belgium. And the other is, he's Thierry Henry. I'm 90% sure, and I thought it came out, that he was in the running for the Barcelona job, which is a unique circumstance. But they're all unique circumstances. You fire a manager in the middle of the season, every team's in chaos, right? And if you're looking for a manager at that point, you're already in a weird situation.
I'll completely give you that Thierry Henry, just by being Thierry Henry, can get a job. And that's why I was saying maybe I'm just being naive about that first division comment. And probably I was. He can get a job. This seems like it would just be, I need to escape. I need, like, I'm going back regardless.
Yeah, I would agree. Again, as I said at the beginning, I think there's a lot of it that makes sense. I don't know if it's 100% the deal that he wants, that the team wants, that it's going to fit everything. But there's nothing, it wouldn't be off if it happened.
No.
And for him, he might look at it and say, no, I wanted to build something in Montreal, and this isn't the ideal spot I want to be. And so he's going to wait. Or he goes and talks, and it's not the team that he wants to be with. But I'm fairly certain he's in England right now. So it makes sense that these rumors are always going to come up. And with his name, every club wants to be connected to him. If you're Bournemouth, this is a coup just to even get mentioned. Also, he's already traded for Mason Toy to build him up as the next U.S. number nine. Now he can go create Cameron Carter-Vickers as the next U.S. center back. It just makes sense for Henry's career.
I mean, perfect situation. I think the one thing that we all know is that Thierry Henry will not be in MLS forever. That's just abundantly clear. There will come a time where the job and the man and it all, the situation, it all sort of dovetails, and he's gone. That was... You knew that when Montreal signed him. You understood what this was to be for him, when all that happened. And it's going to be the case. They're going to have to figure it out.
How do you feel about that? Because I saw some Toronto fans and some Atlanta fans kind of mention, this is why you didn't get Vieira, because they could be gone at the first job.
What Atlanta fans are saying that with they had Tata Martino for 2 years, and he dipped on him. Like, what are you talking about, Atlanta fans? Yeah, I think it's fine. Like, this is who Montreal have been. Montreal has not ever been a place where it's like, hey, settle in for the long run. You're going to be our coach for the, you know, you're going to be our Peter Vermees. When has that ever happened?
And also, Peter with Montreal, Vermees, if Peter Vermees had a EPL team or like a likely to be promoted championship team knock on his door to say, we want you to be the man, Peter Vermees would leave in a second.
Either that or he'd be making a lot more money.
Yeah. And it's, so this is, I like there should not, like that is not a rational line of argument, or like that is not a way to dunk on Club de Montreal if you want to be, you know, like that for, if you're a Toronto fan. Like this is where MLS is as a league, and it's like that is like it's a point of pride. Like if we're putting our managers into, you know, teams in the Premier League, into Champions League teams in the case of Jesse Marsh, or, you know, to jobs with, you know, El Tri or the U.S. national team, like that is something good for MLS, and it's not a mark against Montreal or any other team in this league.
Boy, Toronto FC fans got high on the horse. They got 7 years of Greg Vanney after just emerged from the dumpster fire, saw a little bit of consistency, and were like, look at these guys. What are they doing? What a bunch of jokers those guys are. Like, come on, Toronto. Like, slow down just a little bit. It may not go as well as it has for the last 7 years for you. But I completely agree. Let them go. Yeah. In Europe, people... Look, if we want to say that there's a level that we aspire to, like, Peter Vermees is the massive outlier.
Yeah.
Like, a club that has a Peter Vermees ever in their history, that's a fortunate club, just in the sense of the stability and success that he has brought to Kansas City. But, like, nobody else has that. There's a reason why he is the longest tenured, I believe, at this point by a long shot. Like, it just doesn't happen. You know, Alex Ferguson's, that doesn't happen. I don't know. It was inevitable. It's fine. Sorry, I cut you off, Dave.
No, I was just going to say, to follow up, if this is a move that happens, and we don't know at all, their first-team assistant, Wilfried Nancé, everyone that I've talked to in Montreal around the club, they thought he should have been given the opportunity when Wilmer Cabrera came up there for the end of that season, and then obviously Henry is a big deal, but that's the person a lot of people want to see taking over as the head man. He was in the academy, and they've signed, I don't know, 10 homegrowns. Oh, yeah. Over the last 5 months, and half them have been loaned to CPL teams, but that is a future for Montreal, and that's what they aspire to be. And so he makes sense as a coach, and he's been there for about 6-7 years. He knows the landscape, he knows the terrain, so it'd be cool to see him get the opportunity.
Anders has been on fire in the private chat here. I wish that we could like have that superimposed over what we do on YouTube. This is the big question from him, though, as we wrap this up and move on to Chicharito. From Anders, does any of us know where Bournemouth actually is in England? A train ride right away from London. Yeah, I mean,
it's the mouth of the River Bourne. It's down in the south.
Okay,
I want to say it's by the Isle of Wight. But I want to just really quick.
Wow, jeez,
really quick.
Put the globe away.
The Isle of Wight.
Good lord, you got like the political map out. Yeah, you got superimposed with all the.
Gasman, just to go back to the Vieira.
I could see Thierry you feverishly Henry. Researching. So
yeah,
I was waiting for it.
Because, like, first of all, you said he had one good year at NYCFC. He had 2.5 really, really good years at NYCFC. Okay. When he left in the middle of 2018, that team was right up there with the Red Bulls and Atlanta United, and they obviously went in the tank for the rest of that season after he left. So he managed 90 games. They went from one of the worst teams in the league in their expansion season to, like, I think he – about 1.6 points per game. And then he had a couple of years at Nice, and obviously it didn't end well, but they are 4-9-3 since they fired him. So there was a lot, like, he was actually kind of holding that team together. The results have only gotten worse since they fired him at the beginning of December. So to say that Patrick Vieira failed at either of his stops is insanity. And I still think that for basically any MLS team, if you can get Patrick Vieira as your manager, you should move heaven and earth to get him as manager. And again, no disrespect to Thierry Henry, who, you know, his resume speaks for itself. If the choice is between him and Patrick Vieira for this Bournemouth team, you take Patrick Vieira. The resume is just better. He has 200 managerial games, you know, in top flights. His teams have generally played really good soccer. That wasn't always the case at Nice, but it was more often than not. And the teams have consistently gotten worse when he has left.
I'll give you space to respond, Dave, but I do have a side question here, which is, let's just imagine that, and this is status quo. This is what we expect, you know, to happen. We expect Thierry to leave at some point, but you would think right now we're operating as if he will be the head coach of Club de Foot Montreal. What will they look like this year from, you know, look, we talked about the talent, but from a tactical standpoint, what did you guys see that was built or done last year? And how can that be built on? Because we talked about the circumstances. I mean, they were just like every Canadian team. And I know Michael Bradley came out yesterday at Toronto FC's first day of preseason and said, enough with the excuses. I don't want to hear it about what we went through, how difficult it was. Fine. That's one way of thinking about it. But I think any sort of clear-eyed analysis about what those teams are doing and what they're capable of doing has to include the logistical issues that they may have this year. What could Thierry do on that side of things this year to both advance the club, but also advance sort of his standing, resume, position as a manager?
I think when you look at how 2020 went, he was never able to establish exactly how he wanted his team to play and dictate games. I think he came out early in the year and saw what he had available and went with five in the back because he needed defensive stability and got some promise on the wings from mainly Brogiard of getting some peace in the attack. And then everything from there on, I don't really count much else, because they didn't have time to train. They weren't able to work as a team. And so I don't think you saw at any point, this is how Thierry Henry's teams are going to play. This is the soccer that he wants them to play. And so that's kind of part of the issue, is he's still starting from square one this year. I think he has better pieces and pieces that fit a little bit cleaner. But he doesn't have, okay, I'm three steps into my 12-step build, and so 2021 starts, and this is what I'm rolling out there, which is unfortunate for Montreal. It also could be a reason where it's an okay time for him to leave, because he's not in the middle of anything as much as he thought he would be.
What do you think, Doyle?
I largely agree with that. I just, you know, there are arguably better pieces here this year, but it's not like he's gotten to put his stamp on this team completely. It feels more like he's just, you know, Montreal just kind of pulling pieces together, and okay, maybe we can take a step forward and see, are we going to be a 3-4-3 team? Are we going to be a 4-3-3 team? It's not like, none of that is clear. And in almost every game overall, they will be at a talent disadvantage. So you would understand the appeal of the Bournemouth job if that were to be offered to him.
Yes, I definitely understand it. We will see what happens with Thierry Henry. Folks in Montreal, let us know. 401-206-0MLS. Text us. I think you can. You can probably WhatsApp that number. I don't know. We should probably set up a WhatsApp, something like that. Yeah, ExtraTimeAtMLSSoccer.com.
You can tweet at us, email us. There are digital ways to get there,
yes,
if you don't want to.
Yeah, you can figure that out.
An international message. One of the stories we've never talked about, and we don't have to go into it, but to be mentioned, is Veljko Panovic got,
caught at Chicago
Fire. Yeah. He got Reading. They're fifth in the championship. Last year, I think they were 15th or 20th. So, or 15th, between 15 and 20. So that's an example of a guy leaving MLS and being successful in what is the same league that Henry would be going to, and what's considered a competitive league. It's an interesting kind of under the radar story.
And certainly Bournemouth is a team, like Reading in a lot of ways, that's thinking, and more so than Reading, that has been in the Premier League for a while now, saying we got to get back. Like, so we need somebody that will bring us back. We need to invest at a level that will get us back. And right now they're sort of hovering in a space where if they don't, that gets a little tenuous. We'll see what happens. Let us know what you think, Montreal fans. Speaking of 2020 and getting a pass, I'm here to tell you that Chicharito should get a pass for 2020. I read his comments in the LA Times from Kevin Baxter, a really good interview there. I'm just going to read this quote and give you some context for Chicharito. We mostly talked about the on-the-field stuff, and let's be honest, on the field it was a bust. But I think there's context that matters. Here's his quote to Kevin Baxter. Quote, "I touched rock bottom. I lived things that normally you live through in 5-10 years. You know what I mean? It's not an excuse. It's reality. And the reality is I didn't take responsibility. I wasn't able to handle all of that. Well, what is all of that? Just to remind all of us, well, his grandfather died, who was basically like his inspiration, played professionally in Mexico. His father did as well, I believe. It was sort of this thing that they all had as a family. He couldn't be there for the funeral because of COVID, because of the pandemic. I can't imagine that pain. I know it's a pain that a lot of people out there have felt this year. His wife, with his two young children, 20 months and 4 months, left for Australia, is in Australia. She is Australian, but he's separated from his wife and his children. He had the calf injury, you know, and you can argue about whether he was unprepared or whatever, but I got to tell you, if I was going through what he was going through, I would be unprepared too. I probably wouldn't have my head in it. And then he had probably his worst season ever as a pro. Maybe you got to go back to like early Guadalajara days before he was Chicharito to get to that. So I'm going to sit here and I'm going to say, and we'll get through the rest of the interview where he takes responsibility, he talks about what he's doing and everything else. And I'm going to say Chicharito gets a pass for 2020. You get a full pass, man, but you only get one of them. I think that I'm not sure. I guess I commiserate and I empathize and I think about what the state that I would be in that situation. And then I compare it to the state I'm in now, which, you know, I got to be honest, I'm not that high on, like, I'm trying to stay positive, but like, it's not that good. It's only okay here. Same as I think a lot of people around there. I don't want to have a therapy session here, but like, is that okay? Can we give him a pass for 2020? Is that allowed when he's a $7, $8 million year a guy, when he's the face of your club? Or is this me just like, you know, being a little soft?
I think I've said on this show a few times, everyone gets a pass for 2020 in my book. I'm fine with that. I've been fine with it the whole time. Yeah, there's a level of expectation and hope with a guy like that. Nothing, even if you take away all the off-field stuff, nothing about the way this happened was easy for him. Like, he came in and the season ended and then he went to Florida and got hurt. And so it was like 8 months before he'd actually played a normal soccer game. And by that point, the team was terrible and he didn't have that many pieces around him. So I give him a pass. But I think to your point, like, it's, I think if I'm a Galaxy fan, I'm excited to see this, right? The introspection from him of understanding and working, you know, differently towards 2021, but it has to go right for them and him this year, because you can't imagine 2 years in, even with everything that's gone on, that this is a grouping that works anymore or is together anymore if it goes as poorly as it did this year.
So here's what he says he's doing. He hired a nutritionist, a trainer, and then someone he refers to as his, quote, emotional coach. He apologized to Guillermo Barrichello when Guillermo got fired. He went to that coaching staff and said, this is on me, which, I mean, I don't agree with that. You know, Javier, I don't think this whole thing was on you. Like, yes, you had a role to play and your role is rather large just because of your name and your reputation and your salary and your previous production. But I don't think this is all on him. Here's a quote that, man, it just hits me, man. A quote, when the end of the season came, I did a very profound critique about my life, about myself. I just decided that I can do much, much better. In the emotional and very spiritual side, when COVID hit, it was like the perfect time to expose the things that I haven't worked with. I mean, it just feels like he got hit by a Mack truck, you know, from like a human, personal, emotional level. And to even pick yourself up after a year, I think is asking a lot. He says, as I said, he has all these different people that are around him. He says he hasn't worked this hard in his whole life. This is another one. Quote, I haven't trusted the correct people that can help me to elevate my performances, my sleep, my health, my food, and my relationships. Wow.
Yeah, there's further reading to do on that one if y'all want to do that. I will say it sounds... If I was a Galaxy fan, I would be encouraged, because it does sound like he's had some real introspection, and there were a couple of performances towards the end of the season where he started looking a little bit like the Chicharito that they thought they were going to get when they brought him in a year ago. But this is, I'm not trying to be harsh here. I'm just like, just because as a person, he seems like he's in a better place, and that's great. As a soccer player, it doesn't matter unless they have a system and talent around him that can get him chances. Chicharito's not the type of soccer player. He's not the type of number nine that you play through. You don't have him organize the game and get on the ball a ton and dictate everything. He exists to be in the box, you know, finding those pockets of spaces or making that run to the near post for those one-touch finishes. And the LA Galaxy under Guillermo Barros-Schelotto did not generate those types of chances. They just didn't. Greg Vanney, his number one job is, like, in terms of making the soccer team functional, I think even beyond fixing the defense, is fixing that aspect of the attack and making sure that at least four or five times a game, you are getting the ball to those pullback spots along the side of the box or to, you know, zone 14 where you can maybe slip him through with a little combination play at the top of the box. And you are getting the ball into those spots methodically and getting Chicharito those chances. Because if you do that, he will score goals. That has happened everywhere it's been. And I am happy for him as a human being that he seems to be in a better place. And hopefully for Galaxy fans, as a soccer player, that means he will be in a better place. And that won't matter at all if the team itself is not fixed.
And just to add on top of what Doyle said, which is 100% true, is when you think about all these things that Chicharito is talking about from 2020, and you think about the player he is and the athlete that he is, you know, maybe there are people who could deal with what he dealt with and still perform at a high level because of the things that make them great, right? I'm not saying Zlatan's ever taken a day off, but if that happened to him, he would still be the biggest, most athletic person on the field. He would still be able to affect a game in a way. What's made Chicharito great in his career and loved as well is he does little things well. He gets on, you know, he reacts first. He's quickest to that spot. He reads the game well. He's prepared for how defenders are going to set him up. He sets defenders up, all those things, which it almost probably highlights what he's good at in that in a year in which he's not locked in and he's not mentally together and physically, he falls off even harder, if that makes sense. And so maybe like a Pavone, if this stuff happened to him, he still would have put up 10 and 10 because he's just a freak at some of the things he can do, right? Mbappe, whatever it is. Chicharito's not that player. And so I think on top of everything Doyle said, which is they didn't play to any of his strengths, it didn't make any sense at all, he probably was more affected by the things he went through than some other athletes might be.
I saw a post, might have been on Instagram, I don't even remember at this point. You're scrolling through so much, just the doom scroll just takes over your life. Of Christian Pavone.
Do you want to do an interview with Kevin Baxter?
Yeah, I think, honestly, I might need to go get Chicharito's emotional coach. Like, if one of you guys wants to apply for that position, I truly could use some encouragement from time to time.
I'm just going
to
start planning your dinners for you. I'm just going to take that
honestly,
off.
Honestly, if you could do that, I think it would really let me focus on the things that matter more. I can kind of get, you know, kind of get that off the... But I think I saw Christian Pavone had double ankle surgery. Is that what he's at?
Yeah.
I don't know. He was at the hospital, and I was like... Wait,
it's
what?
One deal. So you might as well. If you're going to do one, you just take
get them both cleaned up. That way you can't walk. No, I'm just kidding. But we still don't know what's going to happen with Christian Pavone. If you don't have Christian Pavone and you look at the way that the roster is constructed, I understand that you can change the way that you play. You can change the things that you emphasize. And I think Greg Vanney will do a lot of that. But you may not have the talent to still put him in a place where we thought he would be. What was our over-under for goals last year that I want to say I smashed the over on? It was probably around 20.
Yeah.
Like what is a realistic 2021 for Chicharito in this Galaxy team? I'm going to say they get Pavone back. I'm just going to say that right now, that all the pieces, all the strands, all the strings somehow find a way to get tied together so that Christian Pavone is an LA Galaxy player. How many goals can Chicharito score? How many, what should be expected of him? Because that's what so much of this comes down to, right? Is these massive expectations that come with his name, his profile, and the combination of those things with the LA Galaxy and their history and their own expectations. What's realistic? Is it 15 goals?
No, I'm going to pass. Honestly, we have to pass on answering this question because the team itself is still very much under construction, maybe more than any team in the league. I mean, the Galaxy have more holes right now than Austin, and Austin is an expansion team. So, like, we just know so little about what this team is going to look like that you can't even answer the question. That's before you start getting into the schedule, because the schedule this year is going to be compressed. It's going to be, you know, Saturday, Wednesday, week after week, we're going to see that. And there's going to be more squad rotation. We don't know how injuries are going to take a toll. We don't know how weather is going to take a toll. So honestly, it is foolish to try to predict anything in terms of Chicharito's numbers this year.
We never know that stuff. And we never know that. What are you talking about?
We always know that. We have the schedule set every year before Christmas.
We pull stupid predictions out of the nether regions all the time on this show and maybe pay for them at times.
So are you giving me the line at 14.5 or 15.5?
I think I'd have to give it to you.
Anders put 20.5.
Yeah, I'm not going to
No, I thought that was what we said last year, and I was like, that sounds like us, or more like that sounds like me last year when they signed him, being like, this is going to be perfect. I'd say it's 15.5. If we said 15.5, where would you land?
Yeah. I think I'm going to go over, and obviously I understand everything Doyle just said, but I don't care. No, I will say this. One, everything that Doyle talked about, which is what the Galaxy need to do to set Chicharito up, is all the things that Greg Vanney wants to do on the soccer field. They're the things he's worked on with Toronto. They're the things he's desired. And so I think the team will be geared towards setting him up in those ways. Whether they're successful or not, that I won't go with because they have no backline. But I'm going to go out on a limb right now and say I'm over on 15.5.
Okay. I'm definitely going to go under just to create balance in the universe from my over from last year that, you know, who knows? I knew how that affected things. Maybe he's like Bjorn Johnson. He's listening to the show. He's like, I got this, man. 20.5. I'm going over on it. I'm saying the under, but I think he will be much, much better this year. Let's talk free agents. Let's play a little matchmaker. These veterans.
Matchmaker, matchmaker, make me a match. Find me a find, catch me a catch. I wish he'd cut me off earlier.
No. Yeah. As soon as you started, I backed out.
I was surprised you kept going. For those who don't know, that's Fiddler on the Roof.
Fiddler.
Continue. Here are five names. I'm just going to throw them out there. We'll see if we can brainstorm a potential match for them. Let's start with Jovan Jones. Mm. Can play a little outside back. Can play winger on the right team. Jovan Jones. Who could use a Jovan Jones right now in MLS? And I guess some of these answers right now are you know, there's an answer in itself is that they're still available. So teams are waiting around to see what might happen with them, what might the negotiation process be like, what might their transfer windows be like. I'll throw out some other names too in case, you know, Jovan's not inspiring you right now. Well, I know you're always down to talk Juan Agudelo. No, I'm just
Swags?
Kidding. Swags, yeah. We got Dom Dwyer.
For Jovan Jones, one, I mean, he could fit anywhere. FC Cincinnati will probably be an answer for every one of these players at some point. Two that popped in my head were Orlando, because they need a little depth at fullback, but I don't think you want a full-time starter there because João Moutinho is your guy. They brought in Suarez on loan from Mexico, but a bit of an unknown quantity. And then he can rotate in on those wing positions for you. Again, not as a full-time starter, but you'd think you'd get enough games out of him throughout the season to make it worth it for them. So those are two that pop in my head for Jones.
Mm. I don't know why I was thinking of them, and you can feel free to slap me down if I'm dead wrong on this one. I know it's not a perfect fit in Dallas, but like they always have issues with wing productivity, and they're cycling through. I know they made some signings, but it doesn't feel to me like Vargas and O'Brien are just like, yep. And then maybe you can push Hollingshead forward. He can play left back. You're shaking your head now. Okay, I'm backing out. Yeah. Backing out on
absolutely
that one.
Absolutely not.
Okay. How about Kai Kamara? That might be an easier fit as we look around the league for teams that need center forward help.
So the issue with Kai is he's never loved coming off the bench, but he's in a position in his career where he'll probably have to come off the bench. That could maybe be disruptive. Just looking at looking at depth charts around the league, NYCFC seem to make a little bit of sense. They have real questions at center forward, especially if Tate Castellanos is sold. They also generate a ton of set pieces on that field at Yankee Stadium. And they play like set pieces over the past 5 years. Set pieces were always, you know, disproportionately overpowered in this game of ours. But in the last 5 years, especially, set pieces have played a bigger and bigger role. And that hit absurd heights in 2020. Well, if you're NYCFC, you could maybe bring in Kai, and then you have Collins, Chanot, and Kai on set pieces when you're throwing the kitchen sink at it, you know, at the end of games. So I like NYCFC as a fit for Kai, but where Kai ends up, like, he's not a starting center forward in this league anymore. You know, and he's going to have to, I think, accept that and embrace a super sub role if he's going to find a comfortable fit.
So one of the teams that popped in my head, and I don't know if it makes any sense because I don't know what does. I was trying to find a new team for him, which is also
yeah,
really
that's
tough.
Difficult. Yeah,
DC United.
I was thinking that too.
If they're not going to spend at that position, we still don't know how Losado's 100% going to play. We think it'll be some two forward setup. Ola obviously struggled last year. I like when Kai is able to link up with a player who plays close to him. So if it's him and Flores in those spots, or him and Assad, whatever it is. I think he could be interesting. Again, to Doyle's point, is he going to, you know, accept where he's at in his career? I think we talked about Piatti a week or two ago. He's mm-hmm. not a starter. If he's going to accept that, a great signing for a lot of teams. If he's not, then it becomes an issue with your group. And so that's the question with Kai. DC could be a spot where he could get some starts.
Could he get some in L.A.? We just talked about the Galaxy. If you look at their center forward depth chart, it's basically Chicharito and Zubac. And we know, of course, Kai has spent a lot of time in and around that facility. Cal State Dominguez, baby. Grew up in the area. Sure, he would love to go back to L.A. I'm just saying, like, he knows in that situation, you know Chicharito is the man. But you know there might mm-hmm. be some minutes. You might be back home in the warmth. Get the injury.
It's a clean fit if, again, he's willing to accept that role.
I mean, he would have been perfect for Scalotto's gameplay in a crossing 95 times a game. But yeah, I mean, LA makes a decent amount of sense as well. I'd take Kai over Ethan Zubac for sure.
What about Dom Dwyer? Are we going to see more Dom in Major League Soccer? Like, what's going to happen there? It feels like it's in this weird moment where there was a time where Dom Dwyer was the biggest. He might still be the biggest internal trade number in this league's history. 1.7?
That was his number?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was like 1.7. All the bonuses on that were super attainable, and like all you had to do was play a couple of games. Anders, go look it up. Go look it up. But like now it sort of feels like we're in a moment where you say Dom Dwyer and I don't think teams are going to be running. It's just he's lost so much momentum in his career.
He's scored double-digit goals once in the past 4 years, despite coming into the league coming into each season as the starting number nine. Like he's just not. We have a almost a half-decade sample size now of him not living up to his billing. And now, obviously, last year was cut short for him by injury, and everything that David said about 2020 being a nightmare for everybody applies to Dom Dwyer as well. But he's like 2020 being cut short by injury for Dom Dwyer is not a surprise given his injury history over the previous couple of years. It's hard to see a good landing spot for him at this point.
Come on, Doyle. You know it's Minnesota. They don't have any – sorry. Besides Foster's Langsdorf, mm-hmm. they don't have any forwards. He's played under Heath. He had success there. And it's a flyer for anyone, right? He's not demanding anything. I don't think he's in a place to. So any team that needs center forward depth, and for that team, it's not just depth right now. Like, you bring him in, he shouldn't be the starter. You're still working on external deals. They're working on – it sounds like a deal with a guy in France. If that doesn't come through, then he's your starter for a little bit. But that's kind of a place where you'd see him. The other one would be Nashville, although they have 19,000 forwards. So I guess
I don't.
Not.
Yeah. Why would Nashville be interested? They're already
attacking flyer that they're taking on domestic.
They're already like three or four deep at center forward. Like Rios's goals per minute last year was totally fine for, you know, a player that you that is like number two on the depth chart. Cadiz is a DP. They just brought in CJ. So you're talking about Dom as at best fourth on the center forward.
Get the whole gang back together. Get Dom in there. Get Kai in there. Get the whole gang back together. Target forwards for life. Target wingers for life, baby. Let's go. Yeah. Put them on the wings.
I could actually see New England being maybe something of a fit for Dom. Because like the last time Dom Dwyer looked pretty good was, I feel like, the 2017 Gold Cup under Bruce Arena. And he played as a true center forward. They were not thrilled with Books's ROI last year, and there isn't really a backup true number nine behind Adam Buksa on that Revs roster. So maybe New England would help, but it's tough.
The De La Garza, yeah. Ima Boateng, experienced MLS guys who create depth with
who Bruce knows. Bruce, yeah,
he's won an MLS Cup, so yeah. You kind of want some of those elements in your team. That makes a ton of sense for him.
What about it?
But you are right, Andrew.
Yes.
It was potentially the record trade. You're saying that they were easy triggers? I don't know.
Yeah, I know they were.
I don't know how much it actually ended up.
I believe it was the full 1.6 that Anders has found. So I was 100K off. I'll take that. I'll take that little L.
Deal, which now, listen, for Dom Dwyer, you wouldn't do it now. And probably in retrospect, it was a bad trade. Other teams are now reaching those numbers, right? Like when they made that deal, the record deal at the time was 600.
Yeah, yeah. It felt like Peter flexed them pretty hard.
Yeah. Now you have the ring trade, you have Nagby, the rumors on Amaya, like
Zimmerman, kind of Ike. A million isn't as crazy as it used to be. Here's another final name I'll just throw out there just to see. Jeff Lorenowitz.
Austin. They need a backup for Ring, and Lorenowitz has been through the expansion thing before. He's a winner and a leader in this league. That one's pretty easy. Like they should just get that done. And even if you can't get more than 500 minutes out of him this year, which I think is all you should really be asking, it just makes a lot of sense.
Is Jeff Lorenowitz trying to move somewhere and play for another team?
I don't know. But they like did the whole goodbye thing in Atlanta, like it was over.
And it wasn't clear that he was retired, right?
I don't think he's announced that he's retired.
Yeah. I don't think so either.
Yeah. Interesting.
He's sticking with it, man. I think the Galaxy could be another place too. They need midfield depth and they need some leadership too. You guys talked about Frankie Amaya? How much?
Enough?
You think so? You don't think there's no more to talk about there?
Like, no. I mean, if you want to, add your Frankie Amaya take, I think the answer is we both really like him and we understand why Cincy are reluctant to trade him. That said, seven figures of allocation cash is really hard to turn down. But it's almost like the Chicharito thing. Like, what happens with Frankie Amaya, his success and failure at this point, it's not even on Frankie Amaya. It's on Cincinnati actually building something functional around him. And we have not seen that, or not building something functional that he can be a part of.
Yep.
And we haven't seen a hint of that in 2 years. So it's actually a kind of a Jaap Stam and Gerard Niekamp question rather than a Frankie Amaya question.
It's a big test for them. Not only in the biggest test, which is can they actually build that thing, but how do they handle this individual, interpersonal, now public sort of spat? From Frankie's side, I'm sure you guys said this, I completely get it. Frankie Amaya is saying, I want to go play in Europe someday. I thought I was on a trajectory to do that. I ended up in a place where I don't see that trajectory panning out in any way. And now I have to try to do something about it. Trade offers were in, and if they're in the seven figures, which is what is being reported, I trust Paul Tenorio's reporting basically implicitly. You know, it's not rumors, it's reporting. Love you, Sam. Hope you're listening. But maybe somebody will pass the word to him. I get it from Frankie's perspective. It sounds like he's just at the end of a rope and he's desperate and he looks around and he's like, yeah, you signed Brenner. And I thought this was a good allocation disorder nugget that he's the 12th most expensive player in the world this window, which is insane. FC Cincinnati doing that work. But like, is that coherent? What's the rest of this project? Get me somewhere that can be. And like, maybe that is in some ways the future of this league and like the internal trade market, where teams that aren't as adept at developing young talent find a way to get their hands on it. In this case, it was through the super draft, which is sort of the traditional way, and then they move it. They show some value, which Frankie has done in 2 years. And then they say, where can we send him to actually capitalize on this investment? Because it might not be here, whether because we don't play young players that way, that's not our plan, or because the state of our project just isn't in a place where a Frankie Amaya-esque person can thrive and increase their value. Why not send him to Philly or LAFC or the Red Bulls or somebody who has a track record of this stuff and say, we get 35%. You know, like put a big sell-on number on it, incentivize. Well, I guess you're not incentivizing that team, but if they're paying big game, they do need to make the move. Like, I look at Philly, it would be a great fit, at least on paper.
Yeah, but Andrew, Frankie Amaya has been Cincinnati's one good player over the course of 2 years. Like, what are you going to tell your fans? We're trading our good player?
Well, that's the problem.
You have a club that has no bridge to your academy yet, so there's not homegrowns coming in who are, like, young future prospects. And on a GA deal... For an American, he's probably the best contract they have.
But that GA deal is probably up after this year. So which is fine. But if he's still one of your best players, okay, that's fine. And I get what you're saying, Doyle. And this is where the credibility gap is not there for Cincinnati. If Cincinnati and Jordan Eichamp and Jaap Stam could say, look, you give me 7 figures in allocation money, and I'm going to use that in a really smart way. I'm going to go get 3 players with that and improve this roster because that's where they're at. They don't need Frankie Amaya. They need Frankie Amaya and like 6 dudes, starters, impact players. So if they had that credibility with the fan base and just they could say, we'll take this. We'll go do it. We got this. Watch us do our work. We've got all these targets. We've been working all throughout the offseason. The window just opened. We've been talking about how it's an opportunity for us. You saw us get Brenner. We're going to get Lucho Acosta. Bop, 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 bop. Here is the 10. Here's the center back. Here's the winger. We just built it all. And by the way, we did it through a guy that's unhappy here. And we got 7 figures allocation for, and we believe once he gets to this other destination, he is good enough to develop to the point that 2 years down the line, year and a half down the line, we got more allocation cash coming in because we made this long-term play. But they don't have that, so you're right. They can't say that, credibly, at least. They've been saying that they're going to go get all these players, and they did go get Brenner done, and applause to FC Cincinnati on that. Their ambition has been for real. It's just a question of whether that ambition is going to turn into something coherent. But you're right. If they trade Frankie Amaya, then all of a sudden it's just another hole to fill.
But you named 3 teams that we've heard connected with him. All 3 of them would make sense. Philly is a very clean fit. He slides in on the side of a diamond. Montero can push higher. He does a lot of those things really well. It's probably his most natural position. So that one makes sense. And then to your point of like the sell on, you look at, it won't be the same number, but you look at what Brendan Aaronson got and you say, if Philly can develop him and push him back into Europe at that number, we're getting 30% of that. And the other one, LAFC, I don't know that Eddie Atuesta is going to be on that roster, whether it's the end of this year, it might be this summer. And so you're already looking at midfield pieces and how it can work. And it would be interesting to see him there. The things about Amaya that I love is one, he wants to be on the ball all the time. And he's a great option consistently. And so when you look at that midfield, if it was him, Blessing, and Kay, maybe no one's a true defensive midfielder, but you got 3 guys that are going to cover a ton of ground and always be a willing passer and always be a willing option. And it would be fun to watch Bob work with him.
It seems like some of this, Doyle, is that Frankie Amaya sees himself more as the player who he was drafted as in a lot of ways, which is more of an attacking player. I don't think a 10. But more of an attacking central midfielder than he has been utilized in Cincy. If he was to be on the Union or the Red Bulls or LAFC, like what does Frankie Amaya in sort of a perfect situation look like? And this is all weird to talk about because like this is unprecedented. I'm sure you guys talked about that. But like we had the Lee Wynn situation, but Lee Wynn had some historical juice, both within the Revs, the club itself, but also just as a player in this little part of neck of the woods. So to speak, he was a veteran. He had national team caps. He had the MVP league campaign. Frankie Amaya doesn't have all those things. So he's coming at this trade demand from a very different standing, let's say, and a little bit of unprecedented one. But let's say the Union do throw out 7 figs or the Red Bulls or LAFC. How would you get the best out of Frankie Amaya to get him where he wants and also to get what your club wants, which is to succeed?
Well, Frankie Amaya has 1 goal and no assists in 3,000 MLS minutes. And granted, a lot of that has to do with playing for a Cincinnati team that's mostly been dysfunctional on the field. But I don't think anybody should be bringing him in with the idea that he's a an attacking player. I think Frankie Amaya's upside is more as an Ozzie Alonso type of ball winner, and in his ball, like his dual percentage is up there with like Ozzie and Diego Chara among the best defensive midfielders in the league. His range is superb, and as David said, he always wants the ball. And to me, you like whether it's a 4-2-3-1 or even eventually a 4-3-3 with him as the back point, he is the guy who you can sort of play through to move from the back to the front, to progress your team upfield, to shield the back line, but also, you know, range a little bit and win the ball. I think that is Frankie Amaya's future. That is his potential, to be that type of guy. He has not shown the ability in the final third in any sense to like unlock a defense or be particularly inventive in comboing around the box. And again, there's a handicap because he's been playing for Cincinnati, but like we would have seen more of that. So if his idea is to force his way out so that he could be the next Brendan Aaronson, he has the wrong idea. If his idea is to force his way out so that he can climb his way up the depth chart of defensive midfielder for either the U.S. or Mexico. And yes, Mexico have, you know, asked around about Frankie Amaya, and there is interest in bringing him into their camp. Then he has, I think, in my opinion, he has the right idea.
Look at this. It's an FC Cincinnati podcast.
Again, this is like our fourth straight.
All right. So next moratorium. Unless Frankie Amaya is actually traded, we will not talk about FC Cincinnati on Monday's show.
Are you going to start like an FC, like a Frankie Amaya fan cam segment every week? Do we do that
before or after the Paxton Pomacall fan cam? What do you think?
Well, it depends on if Paxton Pomacall ever gets healthy.
That's fair. You know? That's fair. All right. Look, we're talking about Cincinnati, and they have, of course, a magnificent USL history, and this is an awkward transition, and we'll just make it work. Dave, I saw you tweet, and I saw Ben Wright hit us up because we put out a tweet for mailbag questions. Ben Wright, who does some great work in Nashville covering that team, says, why don't more MLS teams take chances on players from independent USL clubs? Some solid talent in USL with more professional experience than you'd find in the Super Draft. He's asking this question on the heels of Nashville signing Robert Castellanos, who's a center back, young center back, who's got a good number of professional games, LA Galaxy 2, and then with the Toros down there on the border in Texas, a center back, probably a depth signing for the Houston Dynamo, or excuse me, for Nashville. And then Minnesota signed right back DJ Taylor, who I know you're a big fan of. And then we never talked Tyler Pasher to Houston as well. What's your thoughts on the Ben Wright question? I know Jeff Reuter had a good piece on this at Athletic 2 recently.
Yeah, he's had a number of pieces. It's a weird situation because USL Championship independent team's job is to win. And there isn't a heavy transfer fee involved a lot of times from MLS to USL teams. So the deals don't really make sense on either side. For a lot of MLS teams, it's cheaper to bring an international player in because the way the salary cap structure is worked in with any transfer fee you would pay and things like that. So it's not actually as easy as people think, where it's like, why not take a flyer on a USL player? It's not actually that simple a lot of times. And then you get into like the depths of it, which is, does an MLS team have the rights to this player? And you've got all these other layers to it and all these things like that. These moves, a few of them are interesting. I really like DJ Taylor. It's just a legit right back, can play right wing back, back up to Mentenaire. He gets forward. He's aggressive offensively, but throughout his time in USL, he was able to hold his own defensively. And so he was one of the guys that was on my list of every time people reach out and say, oh, who's interesting? Who should I go watch? Who should I check out? He's been on that list for a North Carolina team that was successful. And Dave Sarakin, of course, was their head coach the last few years. And then Tyler Pasher, interesting for Houston because he's developed into this elite goal scorer in USL, but started out as a wingback. And so has slowly moved infield. He's a great shooter from distance, a great threat. So he could be interesting for Houston coming off the wing as a goal scorer. And again, these guys aren't locked in starters, and some of them may never be starters. But I think both these moves in Taylor and Pasher make sense for the clubs that are making them where they fit in their depth.
I think sometimes we think, oh, there's a bunch of Mark Anthony Kays in USL. Are there, or was that just an outlier?
Kay is an interesting situation because he was, and a few of these players are, absurd talent that didn't work out. And he was in Toronto mm-hmm. FC's group, and he has said himself, mentally I wasn't there, I wasn't the person I needed to be. to get to that level, and going to Louisville turned him into that player. And I think you're starting to see more guys who don't find their feet in MLS and go find their feet in USL. But again, Cameron Lancaster destroyed USL and couldn't get on the field for a Nashville team that couldn't score goals and ended up getting loaned out and then let go. And there's been a lot of examples of that. So it feels like prime USL players, they're probably not ready to be MLS starters. And so then you get into the, well, how much does Louisville, Miami FC of Vegas pay versus how much are you going to make to kind of scrap for an MLS roster spot? And there's still an interesting dynamic there, but I don't think you're looking out at the USL and saying there are a ton of players who can come in and play in MLS.
Yeah, the market, I think you're right. It's complicated going between the two leagues. I would like to see a more robust internal market in MLS, as I kind of talked about with that Frankie Amaya side, as well as USL to MLS.
And one of the things that's interesting is what Real Monarchs has done, which is, and RSL, which is kind of farm MLS 2 players and say, it didn't work out for you at KC, at Red Bulls, at Dallas. Come to Real Monarchs and then kind of try and push them through. And they've done it with Noah Powder and Douglas Martinez and I think Portillo, one or two other pieces. So that's an interesting way to go about it. And that's kind of the ideal for an MLS team, is to bring them in at a USL level, get your system and see how they fit in with your first.
All right, let's hit the mailbag. Got to leave time. 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. We're going to start putting out these tweets ahead of every show. Drop your questions in there. Of course, you can always text us or email us, and we will jump in afterwards and answer the ones we don't get to. I'm on the duty today, so I'll be hitting on Twitter. You can go check that thread. You know, we got some good stuff, some serious stuff. We got John Mueller coming in and saying, if you have two lasagnas and you stack them on top of each other, do you have one lasagna or two? I had lasagna for dinner last night, and I would tell you that's still two lasagnas.
Dinner.
I know. It was awful. It was terrible. A little takeout. Didn't actually enjoy it that much. And then Travis says, is cake truly a flavor? Can't answer that, Travis. Maybe somebody else can help you out. But this is from Andrew in Kansas City, who I definitely don't know. Guys, I need some positive vibes here in Hoth, aka Kansas City. Your first game back, your first full stadium experience. The pandemic is over. We all feel comfortable, or as comfortable as we can feel. What would you want it to be? Where, with who? Paint a picture of that day. I've been thinking about this a lot, I think because I'm surrounded by snow and I can't do anything. Just sort of daydreaming. So daydream. Daydream for me. Where are you going? What are you doing? You can keep it MLS. You can go CONCACAF. You can go outside. Probably not a World Cup. Something attainable. Something like right there in front of you. Dave, where are you going?
I want to hear Doyle's first.
No.
I don't think Doyle goes to that many games. I don't even want to go.
I would obviously want to see Asbury Park FC in their Same Song Park opener. That would be the big one.
Oh my God. Come on. So I need endorphins. You gave me nothing. I should have worn my Asbury Park hat for this show just to hear that reference. I'll throw it out there. I'm going here in Kansas City. I'm bringing, you know, my boys. I'm bringing my wife, my brother and his wife, who is a huge Kansas City fan. Will probably complain about the outside back play the entire game. Just, yeah, God. It doesn't matter. Right back, left back. If you play those positions for Kansas City, Joel Wiebe's not about it. Just the feeling of the buzz. You know, like you walk into a stadium, you kind of walk into like the bowl-ish, the concourse, and you can just kind of feel this energy and you can hear it, and it's more than audible. It's almost like in the air, you can feel it. And then that first glimpse of the field as a kid, I always remember that. Every stadium experience I had, and when we went on vacation, my dad would always take us to, like, you know, we'd go to a Major League Baseball game, or we'd try to get to an NBA game, or wherever we were, whatever road trip we were taking, we would try to go somewhere. And I always remember that moment of, for us, walking out in the nosebleeds and looking down and just seeing that big field, the green or the court or whatever it was. And it's just kind of this, like, for a kid, this take your breath moment away. And I'm really looking forward to living through my son in that sense. I know that I love being in the stadium. I know that I have all these things that just sort of like hit me right in the heart, or sort of in the soul, so to speak. But I'm looking forward to sharing those with him and just seeing him develop those of that first time a goal gets scored by the home team and being like, oh my God, what is going on? Like, this place is going insane, and maybe joining in or maybe being a little nervous and figuring out over time, just that entire day. of like communal enjoyment I'm desperate for. This is a if you want to dig through my id right now and all the, whatever else. Yeah, that's where I'm at. What about you, Dave? I know you got a good one here.
Montclair State University.
Woo!
The empty soccer park. No, I had potential flights booked, being in a hopeful world, that from June 14th to June 21st, I was going to go to Amsterdam for a Netherlands Euro home game. Then I was going to go to Munich for a Germany Euros home game. Then I was going to go to Copenhagen for a Denmark home game. And then London for an England game. And you could hit all of those in one, I think it was like an 8-day span. My friend put this together. So that was my hopeful one. We booked it like a few months ago. You know, there's cancellation now, so you don't have to worry about it. Flying through Lisbon, get an extra 24 hours with some pasties and fresh fish in Lisbon. So that was the dream.
Are you going to catch a Belenenses game?
I would Figa?
Yeah.
Listen, if I won the lotto, that's the team I'd take over.
There you go.
Hump all my money, and I would buy every young MLS prospect. Stick them on a field in Portugal, and that would be the dream.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it's mundane, but just like the path ride that I previously found annoying to Red Bull Arena, like I'd just be marinating in it. Be like, who's going to get on this train? Who's going where? What's going on? What are these people doing? You know, like, hey, keep me on the train. I'm fine. Get there, drink some beers in the parking lot.
I will say, it will be cool to see the Cincinnati Stadium as well as all.
That's what I was actually thinking, was the Cincinnati
Columbus
stadiums, like the Hell is Real Derby. Yeah. If both those stadiums are open, with full fans at the end of this year, like that, if I had to pick one in MLS for 2021, it would be that one.
I can say I haven't been to Cincinnati, but off of Tuesday's mailbag on Twitter, where we asked for breweries in markets, some fan asked, I have about 95 in Cincinnati and about in the rest of the league. It was Cincinnati heavy, and I appreciate it.
I mean, one of these days, we are doing the march together. We're doing the march together. Just beware. Cincinnati's creepy as hell. It's a scary city. All right, what else we got in here, Dave?
I don't know, Andrew. You were doing a good job.
I wasn't. I read my own mail. That's not a good job.
PW Kempley says, how do you think Atlanta is doing so far with the transfer window? They've announced another move today, a loan for a right back, a Venezuelan international from Aberdeen.
Yeah, he was basically sitting around waiting to go. We also had Chris Smith hit us up and say, what do you project for Atlanta United in 2021 based on the current and rumored signings? And that's sort of below. This is what he has their starting 11 as right now. And Doyle, I just want to get your reaction. In goal, Guzan, left, right, in the back, Bello, Robinson, Gianetti, who's the guy from Velez, I believe, that has the connections to Gabriel Heinze. I would guess that you'd still play Robinson at right central defense, so he'd be on the left side, and then Hernandez at right back, Sosa, Moreno, and Barco in central midfield. That's basically three DPs, considering it looks like Young Money is going to be Sosa, and then Lopez, the kid they stashed, Martinez, Joseph Martinez, and Jurgen Damm in those three attacking spots. How would you feel about that if you're Atlanta?
Better than I did about last year. That's a playoff team. As long as Joseph's healthy, they're a playoff team. I mean, they were borderline last year, even without him. But there are still some massive questions. Getting the central defense right after what happened last year is a big one. Making, you know, Sosa comes in with a big reputation and on a big fee, but so did Barco, and Barco's mostly been a bust in this league. Will Barco continue to be a bust? That's a huge question that is not an answer. Again, as long as they have Joseph, all of those are the difference between playoff team and title contender. Joseph just being back is the difference between non-playoff team and playoff team. There are questions, but I would feel much more comfortable as an Atlanta fan than I did this point last year.
You want me to read? I have another list I could read here if you'd like me to.
Yeah. You didn't want to read mail.
I'll get out of the way. My bad.
Let's finish up. We said on the top of the show, with what's going on in Texas, make sure to, you know, look at all the MLS teams. They're all helping, you know, run some donations and help teams. But William Higgins wants to know, on the field, which team in Texas will finish highest in the standings? Because now you've got three.
I think the easy money is Dallas, right? Like, then Austin.
How easy?
Austin, well, not that easy. Austin would be like 1A, and then it would be the Dynamo. No?
I think so, but like Dallas made a lot of signings this offseason, you know, have imported a lot of guys. When's the last time they had an import that really hit? That really, really hit? That was like, this is an upgrade.
I mean,
well, Ziegler was good when they brought him in.
So we're talking what, 3 or 4?
Yeah, yeah, I think Michael years. Barrios had, he had season and a half, so 2 seasons.
7 years. So we've just named 2 guys in 7 years. You know, Santos I thought was pretty good. He wasn't great. Acosta hasn't been a DP level player. Ricuarte had that golazo and did almost nothing else. We know that Mosquera is now gone, but he was brought in as a DP. Jara was brought in as a DP, and I think under-delivered. Maybe this will all get better in 2020, or 2021, rather, because last year, again, as you said, David, was miserable, and like everybody kind of deserves a mulligan. But I'm not sure that Dallas fans are inclined to give their team the benefit of the doubt with these signings. And I don't think really that we should either. We need to see it from this team a little bit. That said, they are probably the odds-on favorites ahead of Houston, who have improved, but really kind of went into the toilet last year once Elise left, and don't have a clear replacement at that level for him. And Austin, even though we really like, I think, Austin,
speak for me on that. Yep. Point,
we're talking about good for an expansion team, not necessarily LAFC or Atlanta United year one type of levels.
And I think Dallas was 5th in the West last year, right?
Yeah, 5th or 6th. Yeah.
You would assume, I think they're probably better this year. I don't know what everyone else is, but it would be tough for Austin. They were 6th. It would be tough for Austin, I think, to be above 5th in the West year one, especially if the DP at 9 or 10, wherever they do it, is coming in the summer. So it sounds like Doyle's on Dallas. I'm on Dallas.
Yeah, I said Dallas. I started with Dallas. I set the odds.
Well, you said the easy money, which doesn't normally mean the one you
pick. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I'm going Dallas. I think it'll be close. I think it's them and Austin. But I do think Houston takes some sort of step forward in coherency, though that may not always be a results thing. Who knows, man? 2021 is probably another wash. Thanks for sticking with me this show, guys. I've been having a, you know, it's been a tough one around these parts. I missed my social hour on Tuesday, couldn't do ETR. I don't have any other social connections. Yeah, that's it. Andre says Andre says
reminder of the day. This show is over now. Thank you for listening.
Anders literally wrote, "Time to wrap, put him out of his misery." We'll see y'all on Monday. We'll be right back.